Welcome to the Animation Podcast, an official podcast of Filmbook. The Animation Podcast is a weekly animation news podcast that reports on the latest animation movie and TV show news.
Oh, you bet it is, Epic Trailer Guy. You bet it is. Welcome back to the Animation Podcast, baby. A weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Ephraim Burney. If you're tuning into the Animation Podcast for the first time, what I do on this podcast is discuss the current week's animation news. Now, you can find more about the Animation Podcast and more episodes on Filmbook, that's film-book.com, by using the search terms The Animation Podcast. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or another podcasting service, please rate and review this episode. And if you're listening to the podcast on YouTube, please like our video, subscribe, and consider becoming one of our patrons on Patreon at patreon.com/filmbook. Your support helps us create more engaging content. And look at that, they brought me back. They haven't fired me yet, gang, though if they have this guy who's doing the intro on payroll, I think they should just hit him up, because he's going to make this much more exciting than I can. But hey, it's me again. I'm going to talk more about the top news in animation today, and then we're going to get into some other things. We'll talk about some reviews. There's a lot of new trailers out this week. We're going to get into all of it. But first, I gotta pay respects to the people that got us to where we are today. In top news, we lost two animation legends this week. Disney veteran Ruthie Thompson, who worked on projects dating as far back as Snow White, passed away at the age of 111. And co-creator of the Pink Panther, David H. DePatie, left us at the age of 91. Both died of natural causes related to their age and will be remembered as the Hollywood trailblazers that they were. Now, Thompson in particular was a force in the industry with a career spanning over 50 years. She was an inspiration for young women and men alike, and we are where we are because of the visionaries like her and DePatie. I mean, if you really think about the work, the portfolio between these two people, Thompson in particular, I mean, you go all the way back to the late 1930s with Snow White, and she was working all the way up to, with Disney, she was working on The Rescuers in the mid-70s, and then she went even further on, she did the animated Lord of the Rings, I think, and that's like an entire lifetime's worth of childhoods shaped by cartoons and animation and movies, and it's just so, it's astounding to look at this person's resume. And also DePatie, I mean, Pink Panther is talked about, it's not really as big as Bugs Bunny or Mickey Mouse or even Hello Kitty in some respects of like just iconography, but my God, I mean, these characters are huge. We owe so much of like our modern day fluidity and movement and character modeling and animation to those early things like Pink Panther, those characters. I don't know. I can gush about them all day. It's a terrible loss, but their work will always be remembered. Now, moving on to last weekend. Last weekend was New York Comic Con, and we have been gifted with a boatload of new trailers and pictures of fans dressed as Dr. Octopus, some of which I will cover for you right here. The trailers, I mean. The Dr. Octopus pictures we can cover in a different podcast, if you really want it. One of the biggest teaser trailers to drop was the announcement of DreamWorks Animation's all-new CG series, Dragons: The Nine Realms, a new spin-off from the How to Train Your Dragon franchise. From what we know so far, the series takes place 1,300 years after the ending of the last Dragons movie, and dragons themselves have kind of become little more than myths and legends in a modern world. So far, the only confirmed cast member is Jeremy Shota, who narrates the trailer. We can see his character riding kind of a slick black and white dragon that kind of reminds me of Toothless from the original movies. I don't know enough about what these... It could just be that that's what the dragons look like, but he looked familiar enough, so it could be maybe it's his great his great-great-grandson or something much more greats with that. The series is going to premiere on Hulu and Peacock on December 23rd, 2021, so get yourselves excited, gang. And let's move in, since we're already talking about trailers, let's talk about trailers and new things or release dates and whatnot in our bigger category of streaming. Marvel, DC, Disney, Netflix, HBO Max, Hulu, Cartoon Network, we're going to talk about them all. On a smaller note, but one that I like a lot that I'm excited for, Netflix has finally given us a release date for the part two, the sequel season, I suppose, of Kevin Smith's smash reimagining of the 80s classic Master of the Universe Revelation. The five-episode new season will be coming to our little red and black screens on November 23rd, 2021. If you haven't seen the first part, I really recommend it. Kevin Smith has such a love of the original source material, and I've actually had the pleasure of working with several of those folks at Powerhouse Productions, the animation company behind the reboot, and they are just some of the coolest guys you're ever going to meet. But you guys want to talk about trailers and trailer reactions, and I have just the thing for you. So Amazon Prime Video just gave us a look-see at the new adult animated comedy series Fairfax earlier this week. The show centers around four middle schoolers on a quest for internet notoriety and street credit on Los Angeles' Fairfax Avenue. It is the brainchild of creators slash executive producers and longtime buddies Matthew Hosvatter, Aaron Buxbaum, and Teddy Riley. Again, names have never been my strong suit, you can tell by my name. but it will star Skylar Gisondo, Kiersey Clemons, Peter S. Kim, and Jabuki Young-White. Now, all three of these creators are relatively new to the writing and animation scene, from what I can understand. Hosvatter has the most credits. He was a staff writer for 2015's Undateable. And I'm a big fan of the four leads. I've followed Jabuki White's comedy for a while now. He is very funny. And Skylar Gisondo, again, I'm hoping I'm saying his name right, actually, he stole a role from me in the Vacation reboot way back when, and he did a much better job than I ever would have. So, good job, Skylar. I would be lying if I said I was excited for this one. I think the animation itself has kind of fallen victim to adult animation syndrome, or they think that they can make something look purposely really ugly for cheap and get away with it as like a stylistic choice. Also, this is just me, and I don't want to get too like biased and whatnot. This is supposed to be relatively objective media, but I am kind of sick of seeing adult comedy TV animation about like preteens and middle schoolers and, you know, just them talking like they're guys in their 40s. Like, it never sounds right to me. And especially in a show like this, which is about like current trends, and it feels really out of touch with these guys talking about TikTok and dabbing and I don't know. This one's maybe not for me, but it might be your thing. Moving on, Hulu released a first clip from the second season of the animated reboot of Animaniacs at New York Comic Con this past weekend. The clip features a segment from an episode parodying something like the Thundercats in the realm of 80s cartoons from earlier. This is probably a response to the recent trend of rebooting these things, like I was just saying, with She-Ra and Masters of the Universe. Which makes sense. I mean, that's what Animaniacs does really well. The parody, from what we see in the clip, the parody is mostly Yakko, Wakko, and Dot redesigned as kind of ripped titans of that era, and they're fighting off a giant robot. I always, a little kind of Spidey sense, a little Ephraim sense perhaps goes off in the back of my head when more comedically focused animated shows throw in these really big action set pieces. They do that a lot in Family Guy and to a lesser extent Rick and Morty. When they do it in Rick and Morty, it's more kind of about like the general premise. Like that's what the show is about. That's a little side tangent though. I guess the people making Animaniacs, they have a lot of fun and a lot of love for that style of animation and that where it came from. That's probably what they grew up with. So this could probably end up being a fun sort of blink and you'll miss it homage type marathon, at least in this segment. I like Animaniacs. I like those characters a lot. I liked the reboot, and I think this second season is really encouraging for those writers, and I'm excited for them.
Wow, this whole segment was really me just like ripping on on new stuff. I'm really excited. I want everybody to know that. I just am. I guess I'm a snob too, but who knows. Moving on to anime news and trailers. On Monday, October 11th, we got our first look at Dragon Ball Super Superheroes, a new film from the folks over at Toei Animation, written and designed by the original creator himself, Akira Toriyama. The movie is slated to premiere sometime in 2022 and will serve as a sequel to Dragon Ball Super Broly. This movie is set in the age, I guess I looked this up, it was the canonical age 784, which is right after Goku and the gang defeat Buu, who is then reincarnated into Uub. I know just from the way I'm talking about it, it sounds like I probably don't know anything about Dragon Ball, but this was actually my favorite saga of the series. I loved Buu as a bad guy. I loved Super Saiyan 3. I loved Fusion. I loved when they had the grandkids and the kids were like fighting too. I thought that was really fun and cool. I was a kid when I was reading it and rereading it, so it appealed to me. So if you're like me and you might be particularly excited for this film, we don't know much about the story right now. There appear to be like two new alien characters named Gamma 1 and 2. There also seems to be this kind of little bratty kid character. We see some glimpses of this kid in, like, a car looking upset. He looks like he's got, like money, or he's kind of like a boss in some way. I can't really tell. Who knows what that might imply. But if I had to guess, this kid could be playing sort of an antagonistic role against Pan, Goku's granddaughter, who seems to be kind of a featured hero in this movie. She would maybe be 5 or 6 at that point. We see her in the trailer kind of training in the beginning. So who knows? Like, she might end up fighting this kid. And speaking of Toei Animation, on Tuesday, the anime juggernaut itself announced a partnership with the South Korean film company CJ Entertainment, the studio behind Best Picture winner Parasite. With this team-up, we can sort of expect to see a symbiotic relationship between the two companies. We would see animated versions of CJ properties and live-action versions of Toei classics, as well as new works developed by both of them. Toei Animation is saying that they intend to broaden their focus with this merger and make products aimed globally, specifically targeting European, North American, and Southern Eastern Asia markets. So if you've been, if you've been dying for an animated rendition of Bong Joon-ho's capitalism parables, get excited for 2024, because that's when we're going to start seeing some of that on the big screen. And now, since they're targeting these places around the world, I think that's a good segue, as good a segue as ever, to talk about and move into our new section, Animation Around the World. Over in Montreal, Saturday Animation Studio is developing their second original animation project titled Iko and the Masters of Time. It's described as a serialized sci-fi adventure and will be produced with Digital Dimension Entertainment Group's Unreal Engine-based real-time pipeline animation. It sounds like a tongue twister there, but that's what they describe it as, and it's actually really cool. Most of you guys listening probably associate Unreal Engine with video game development, but excitingly enough, DDEG has found great success in using it solely for animation. Their last outing with it was for the NBC Universal series Zafari, though Iko seems to be a premise more focused on, like, teen adventure-like tone. I think Zafari was more of a kids-type show, at least from the little I've looked up and seen of it. Now, moving to warmer climates, Nigerian-based animation studio Gureza Animation dropped a trailer for their new miniseries that they're developing titled Umoja. The series is aimed at children, and it's about a team of kids fighting two sort of dastardly villains to keep them from spreading misinformation about COVID-19. From the trailer, the animation style seems sort of simple and child-friendly, and I can get behind anybody trying to keep people informed and entertained at the same time. That's what I'm trying to do here, to varying degrees of success. But it looks really good. It'll be it's an interesting thing to see how the pandemic and COVID has affected the animation industry.
You've seen a lot of that affected in live-action television, but we as animators and animation watchers haven't really needed to keep that in mind because we create worlds out of thin air. So it's interesting to see this play a different role than we might expect animation to play. Let's take a swing, let's mosey on over to home video and digital HD releases. Now, in the world of animation, this week has been relatively slow with DVD and Blu-ray, though we are getting Free Guy from Walt Disney Entertainment on Blu-ray this week, and if you had a chance to look at some of the CGI in that thing, you might have thought the whole damn thing was animated. No, that's just for me. I'm sure they'll make me cut that out. And while not a physical release, Netflix subscribers can be excited by the announcement that Earwig and the Witch from Studio Ghibli, this was their first little sticking their toe into the world of CGI, that is coming out, that is coming their way to Netflix next month. And speaking of witches and wizardry and magic and all those things that would make my Episcopalian minister grandpappy turn over in his grave, I have a review for you of the new Netflix series that came out earlier this week, A Tale Dark and Grim. First, just a bit of general information. The series is based off of the book series by Adam Gidwitz. It was developed by Simon Otto, who worked in animation on How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2 and Kung Fu Panda, and Doug Langdale, who was the creator of numerous things. He's been around for a while, but very personal to me, creator of Dave the Barbarian, which I loved and was also deeply based in fairy tale lore, so it makes a lot of sense that this would come from something like him. There are three directors credited for each episode, one of which is Simon Otto, who developed and created it. The next is Jamie Whitney, who worked in the late 90s and early 2000s a lot with Maggie and the Ferocious Beast and Eek the Cat, shows like that. And then, strangely enough, Meredith Lane, who is typically a casting director from what I know her from, but is credited here as directing the voice and talent. So already you have this sort of motley crew of a creative team. There are five writers credited. Interestingly enough, it's none of them are Adam Gidwitz, the original creator of the book series. I guess that's kind of the par for the course with adapting something. Though he is credited as a producing consultant, so who knows what his involvement was in the long run. But the five writers are Doug Langdale, David Henry, Doug Hall, Jeffrey Reddick, and Candy Langdale. I don't know what her relationship is to Doug. Could be blood, could be something else. And then you have a cast of Andre Robinson plays Hansel. Rainey Rodriguez from Austin and Ally, if you're a big Disney fan, she plays Gretel. And then rounding out the cast, you have three crows that sort of serve as narrators and storytellers. They're voiced by Scott Adsit. You know him from 30 Rock. He's been around forever, but you probably know him from 30 Rock. Ron Funches, he's a comedian. He's the voice of King Shark on Harley Quinn. He's got a great voice. And then Erica Rhodes, she's also a comedian. I don't know her as well. I know she has been on a lot of radio stuff. She's been on A Prairie Home Companion. I think she's been on that for like ever. It's been a while. But let me tell you a little bit about the show. I actually have a unique perspective on this one. I've gotten to see it at several different points in the pre and post production process. I auditioned for it at one point to be one of the voices. I got to see their pitch Bible when they were pitching the show. And I've seen how it's gone from what I think the creators maybe originally wanted it to be to how whatever it's ended up as now. But let me tell you a little bit about my thoughts. I'll give you a brief story synopsis. It's about Hansel and Gretel. If you don't know them, you've got bigger problems than me explaining who they are. But it's the two of them. They have to run away from their home and their family. And each episode, it takes them to a different grim fairy tale. Now, sometimes they're apart and sometimes they're together and they'll experience them like side by side. But they are always the focus and kind of the dynamic core of the show. Now, look, it's going to be a little difficult to talk about a show about two twins uncovering mysteries and fantasy in a magical world of monsters and creatures and stories without kind of comparing it to Gravity Falls. And the precedent that show set. It might be an unfair comparison to make. I'm not sure. I don't know if they have different target audiences, but that is kind of where I want to start with my critique of A Tale Dark and Grim. My biggest problem with the show is that it doesn't know what tone it wants to take, and who that target audience is. Now, take this with a grain of salt. I'm a little old to be watching a kid's show. I grew up on things like Courage the Cowardly Dog and Dexter's Lab and Billy and Mandy when I was a little older. And these were shows that I felt were targeted towards that age group of maybe 8 to 12, I'd say. And they weren't really scared to show us something darker, especially Courage, that had character designs that were really meant to kind of freak you out a little bit. So with this show, which I feel is targeting that same audience, this show wants to act like it's throwing those same punches that its predecessors kind of set up for it, but pulls most of its blows, if that makes sense in a metaphor. A good example is, okay, so you start the show, in lieu of a theme song, there's just some music underneath a narrator. And the narrator keeps telling the kids how scared they should be, and how, you know, how awful and dark and scary these fairy tales are going to be. And it's kind of feels as though it's setting us up for something that it doesn't really deliver on, and really doesn't seem like it ever had any intention of delivering on. I'm not saying that A Tale Dark and Grim needs to have gore and viscera flying up the screen. The shows that I'm comparing it to didn't have that either, but what they did do is they followed through on a promise that they made to their viewers, and I feel like this show wants to make that promise, but is too scared to follow through on it, and that's sort of the core identity problem with the show, at least in my opinion. An example of this is another good example. So these three crow characters that Ad, Sit, Funchess, and Rhodes play, they get pretty irksome to me. They are always there telling stuff that we already know, which I guess is kind of the role if you're targeting a younger audience. But what they really do is keep coming in and saying, oh my god, this is so scary, this is awful, this is so horrifying. And they build us up to this thing that's gonna come, and then whether it's the limitation of the animation or a studio, you know, decision later on, they pull back. They talk about an episode, I think it's the third episode. They have a whole build-up in the prior episode talking about how bloody and messy and gory this episode is going to be, this third one. And then we get to a point where nothing really happens. There's sort of a character goes on sort of a hunting spree and piles up this mountain of dead animals. But they all look like, they all have the same model. So it looks kind of like a pile of Beanie Babies. It's not, that might be harsh, but it is very limited. It's also, speaking of modeling and animation, there are multiple occasions where characters repeat themselves, and I don't mean like the same character comes back. I'm saying the same model comes back, but now he has a mustache or a different skin color or a different hat on. And at first I thought it was sort of supposed to be like a joke, but when they start to have crowd scenes in later episodes, it becomes kind of painfully clear that, oh no, there's like maybe just 4 or 5 different people that you created, and you sort of stuck them together. And look, that's an old animation trick. In SpongeBob, most of the fish look exactly the same. And maybe I just judge CGI animation a little too tough, but a lot of those scenes feel very empty because of that. If it sounds like I'm judging this a little too harshly, or I'm coming from a place of disappointment, it's because I've seen the materials that this show was sold on, the original concept art and the packet, and what they were marketing, at the very least, or promising, was something much closer to the concept of the book, which was kind of acknowledging a darker side of fairy tales and honoring that again. They really sold this story on the idea that, yeah, stuff happens to Hansel and Gretel that's pretty scary. They get their heads chopped off. That's not a spoiler. That happens, like, within the first 5 minutes. They have permanent stuff that kind of damages them, and they get trauma. And they don't really go there, at least in the final product of what I've seen. And it could be that maybe it's I'm more frustrated by the limits of CGI animation as opposed to kind of a 2D thing, because there are aspects of this show that are pretty cool and scary. Whenever they have a gory, kind of scary moment, they cut to a sort of paper cutout 2D plane, and that's really cool. They also have stuff with the sun and the moon that have these faces on them, and that is more frightening. Those two, like, background things are more frightening than any of the bad guys or baddies that Hansel and Gretel face in the kind of CGI 3D world that they live in. Maybe I'm just butthurt because they, you know, it doesn't look like what I thought it was gonna look like. That could very well be it. But I do think that there was a sacrifice made in the storytelling to accommodate what they thought might be a more kid-friendly visual style. And the visual style is not half bad, I gotta say. The backgrounds are really kind of luscious and cool. I love the textures on a lot of these things, especially Hansel's hair is pretty cool and tactile, and it looks nice. They look like action figures. That's my problem with it, maybe. They look like toys, and that could be very well done on purpose. A lot of this stuff is made to sell toys. I was talking about My Little Pony last week. So all that could be forgiven if I felt as though they hadn't sacrificed aspects of the story because of that. And this is where I get into my Gravity Falls argument again. I feel as though Hansel and Gretel are not strongly enough differentiated until maybe halfway through the series. Oftentimes it feels like a line that one of them could say would also be said or could be said by another one of them, which is so frustrating because they need to play off each other so well. And you can tell that they love each other, and that's something that is a motivating factor for you to want them to be okay, and when they get separated, you want them to get back together. They just feel undeveloped. They feel mushy. They don't feel as though they have strong enough personalities, which other kids' shows like Gravity Falls have done so well. The biggest way they try to differentiate the characters is that Gretel is more of like a heady person, and Hansel is more of sort of like a heart, guttural instinct sort of person, which is such a basic trope, and is so just like, it's not even something that you can even say is like a dynamic anymore, because it's just, yeah, that's just everywhere. And when there is something that I feel like I can hold on to with the characters, it feels like it's sort of nebulous. It feels like it can go and come as it pleases. This is my last example, and then I promise I'll stop talking about it. There's a moment, and I think the second episode, where they're kind of on a journey. And up until that point, Hansel has been sort of what they're setting up his character to be is that he needs to be brave to stand up to things to take care of his sister, because she can take care of him. So in the second episode, they go on a journey, and they start into a montage where they talk about, yes, Hansel and Gretel traveled for months and months and months, and they learned this and they learned that. And then at one point they say towards the end of it, and Hansel learned how to be brave. And I said, wait a minute now. That was his arc. That was the thing that we were supposed to see him learn how to do. How did he learn how to be brave? How did that happen? So it feels like there is so much story, and this is usually the case in adapting a book. There's a lot of story that could be there, and they're trying to truncate it into one thing. I'm a strong believer, and this is more storytelling advice that you didn't need or ask for from me, but I'm a strong believer that the best and most satisfying character arcs and changes are those that are earned through trial and error and action that we see. Obviously, you know, it's kind of why I think a lot of people think that Zuko is the more interesting character in Avatar as opposed to Aang. That's a whole other show for a whole other podcast. Regardless, a tale dark and grim, I would probably give a 2 out of 5. It's fine for kids. There's some cool fairy tale stuff in there, and the animation is sometimes pretty interesting. And it's nice that they're trying to tell a darker thing for kids. I just don't think it goes to exactly what it wants to do. With all that said, let me move on to what I'm going to recommend for the week. I'll make this quick because I was just ranting about a children's show for God knows 15 minutes. I want to recommend a movie that I saw this week that I loved so, so much. I feel silly even calling it underrated or underrepresented or unknown, because it isn't. It's, you know, people saw it and it was nominated for an Oscar in 2019, but I had never seen it, and I don't know anybody else that's seen it. It is the movie I Lost My Body by Jeremy Clapin, who wrote and directed Schizen and Palmipedarium, two French movies. Everybody's going to start thinking I'm a Francophile on here, I promise. This is just like, I'm on a kick. I'll do something from America next week, I promise. but it's written by Clapin and Guillaume Laurent, who has written so much, but like Amelie, he had a writing credit on Amelie. So cool. This movie, I don't even want to explain too much about it, because it's so simple and cool and such a testament to animation. But the premise is a disembodied hand is in search for its previous owner, and at the same time, a young man falls in love with a woman that he meets while delivering her pizza. It's got two different casts because it's French, and we have an English version. The French cast is Hakim Fahry. Again, please, I'm so bad at names. I gotta stop picking French films. But Hakim Fahry, Victoire Dubois, and Patrick D'Assomption. I hope that's how you say his name. I'm so sorry. But the English cast has Dev Patel, who you've seen. He was just in The Green Knight. Great actor. Aaliyah Shawkat, who... She's been in a lot, but Arrested Development, it's such a fan of hers that's like shaped all of my humor. And George Wendt, also a great journeyman actor that you've seen around everywhere. What I particularly love about this movie is the fact that it has the guts to make an entire thing about a disembodied hand. I mean, it's not all about that. There are two storylines going on, but the one that is really worth noting and admiring is this hand, the movement and the characterization on just this severed limb is so exciting and dynamic. And God, I mean, the whole point why we have cartoon gloves on our characters is because drawing hands over and over again is so impossible and difficult, and they pull it off in this flawlessly. It is so, so exciting to watch, seeing him kind of move about and escape different tunnels and things, and he's on the street, and then he's in the sewer and the subway. And then he's up on top of the rafters and the rooftops. And it's so emotional just seeing this kind of this where we've come and the passion poured into the animation of this hand. If you could see my hand right now, I'm trying to replicate it myself. I just think it is spectacular. And the story is, you know, some people might think it's pretentious. I didn't. I think it was very simple and lovely and just captured a human moment, and it didn't feel like it needed to wrap anything up. I was really, really moved and impressed by what they did with this. The animation itself alone is so exciting. But the story itself is great. The music is fantastic. And I really do recommend anybody that has a chance. It's on Netflix. You should absolutely check it out. I cannot recommend it enough. I loved it. And it's a quick watch. It's like 80 minutes. I will be the snob. I'll be the guy who says it was robbed at the Oscars. I'm sure it was never going to win. But I'll say it was robbed by Toy Story 4. I thought Toy Story 4 was fine. But I think this movie is so cool and so, so good. Really, guys, check it out if you can. And with that, I've reached my limit. I'm hoarse. I'm breathless. I'm gonna wrap up the show for you, gang. So thank you for watching this episode of the Animation Podcast. Be sure to like this episode and subscribe. You can find more of my work on Filmbook. That's film-book.com. Just search Ephraim Burney or the Animation Podcast. That's Ephraimbirney. My name is down in the article. You can read it. You can also find me on Twitter at Frumblers or on Instagram at Ephraim_Burning. If you would like to contact us, you can email us at podcast@film-book.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you for listening. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Animation Podcast. Find more of the Animation Podcast on Filmbook, on your favorite podcast service, and on YouTube.